Welcome to the epilogue of Campaign 1 of the Stubborn Heroes, a Dungeons and Dragons podcast. Where we last left the heroes, the world was crumbling under the presence of the Dragon King. After all the others had given their lives, it was the rogue, Cedric Crow, who made the ultimate sacrifice, giving his own soul and fate to write in the Librium of Knowledge, ending the return of the Dragon King and restoring the lives of his allies.
And you're all standing there on the mountainside. Phileas is there. Myra's there.
Phileas, what happened?
I don't know if that's what people would say. What happened?
How am I here?
Oh, boy.
So am I still currently here, or am I, like, gone right now?
There's the only person who is not alive is Cedric Crow.
Well, what about Rosend?
Rosend didn't die. Because you have all saved the realm from total destruction. And I can delete this motherfucker up here.
Be gone, fuck.
A light shining through the sky.
So Cedric's gone?
Cedric is gone.
Can I have a, like, drop a little note for somebody to find?
Sure. I'm not going to say no. Hey, Endgame let Captain America come have his happy ending. Only you have yours.
If Endgame did it, we have to.
Basically, like, if somebody specific wants to discover it, it'll just be a little note that's on the ground. And I'll send it to you via messenger.
Okay.
Unless you guys want to roll for it.
Myra will look for it because she has a connection with Cedric.
Aerotol took it. Aerotol took it.
That works.
So I'll send it to you.
Well, Myra will be preoccupied with Phileas, so.
Guess I won't be coming back from this one. I never knew what it was like being a part of a family until I met you guys. I hate goodbyes, so I'll see you later.
Phileas, you're alive again. Seemingly at the end of the world.
Oh, wrong person.
Light shines from the skies above as the enemies, the Dragonborn, begin to retreat back to their isles. The drow disappear into their caverns below. And the demonic legions that were down below, their portals close as they are completely vanquished from the lands. And you guys have successfully beaten the campaign. Level 20s. So.
Epilogue.
With everything that happened, I'll tell you generally, and then each of you can tell me how your characters spent the rest of your days.
There we go.
What did Harris do with the rest of his days?
Harris spent the rest of his days alongside Greg traveling around the realm, visiting all the places with Greg, and eventually he died of old age with Greg by his side.
And Greg died a minute later.
Shut up.
You said he could. He only lived as long as you did.
Yeah, right? That's true.
Because he knew that you would destroy the world.
Yeah.
He died of a broken heart a minute after Harris.
Yeah.
Let's do David. So what did Phileas do with the rest of his days?
So with everything that went on, Myra ended up getting the note that Cedric sent her. He sent a vial of Aurel's water. After everything is done, CD voluntarily drank it himself and turned himself into an island so that the druids can live on that. But because he realized he was able to walk around the island and still be free, he was just the center of it. Myra led the druids on the island, and Phileas came and went as he adventured throughout the other lands, searching for more druid tribes. Seedy voluntarily did it. It is called New Mandera.
New Mandera. Moving on, Izamon, what did you do with the rest of your days?
Ruling a citadel, mostly like having it high in the sky, moving it around the continent, and just being the like the hub for all the portals. Mm-hmm. Just continue and just ruling until either passed away or if he didn't pass away.
Yes.
Now being the ruler of the citadel.
So mysteriously disappearing into history. Cedric, oops, not. Balrin.
So Balrin returned to his island of Tol and rebuilt it as a pirate capital, though still having the Lightbearer powers. Imagine him one day passing on the powers into somebody worthy.
Mm-hmm.
So as he, you know, was on the island, he also rebuilt the Crimson Galley, but much bigger.
Nice.
And he would travel along with the other pirates searching for the next Lightbearer.
Just put it back in an instrument. Let someone find it.
No, he can't just let anybody have this power.
No, but once they have it, they actually have to play the song to activate it.
I'll be long dead before they figure that out. I imagine that'd be where he's left off at, though.
And that leaves us with Eritol. What did you do after the Great War, and what did you do with the rest of your life?
After picking up the note from Cedric, Eritol's actually gonna go around changing all the crow's corners into like Cedric corners as a like homage to Cedric and his sacrifice. He's gonna work with Barchode and take control of the crows to maintain that entire spy network. He's definitely going to frame the note and keep it in one of the original crow corners, found the secret hideout of Cedric, and just like put it up on the wall there. And then, he's going to turn like dimensional spy type thing.
Interesting. That's interesting.
And you get a portrait picture painted of him defeating the Dragon King.
There's going to be one of those painted in every single center corner.
The town of Preston, once nothing more than a simple trading village on the shores of Ettenvale, became world-renowned after the unfated war. Sightseers and worshippers from across the realm made pilgrimage to witness where the unfated's journey began. Upon the death of Mayor Quibble years after the war, the town appointed Aurora as their new mayor. She went on to grow the small town into a bustling city, and acquired great wealth and fame in her later years as a writer, where she penned romance novels centered around a fair, lonely maiden and a certain strapping black dragonborn. The hag Glenda, along with her sisters Agatha and Helga, reunited and reformed the Coven of the Green Harvest. Forevermore, they entered the nightmares of those who strayed too far from the main roads of Ettenvale. The stories told of Slithermorn had always been mysterious, but even more so in the decades that followed the unfated war. A flash of green light was seen in the skies above the town, and in a moment it was gone. Only the outline of where the old bones of the dead god Vahir once were. Within a year, the swamp had completely consumed where the town once stood, with no trace of its inhabitants ever seen again. The stoic and blind Lord Wallace lay on his deathbed soon after the war. Many stories have been told of what happened the night he disappeared. And most say that he leapt from his high tower into the sea. Though his body was never recovered. Others speak of a mysterious elven man with cold blue eyes seen in his chamber that night. Some believing that this mysterious stranger took Lord Wallace and disappeared in the dead of night. In the absence of an official elven lord to take over leadership from Lord Wallace, the lower city rebelled and overthrew the squabbling nobles above. The two conflicting sides eventually coming to an agreement by appointing the well-respected General Maquil to rule. Those in poverty below were risen up, and those who lived in surplus and abundance above were knocked down a few pegs. The city of Wallace has since grown into a prosperous and central trading hub, known across the realm. Out of all the revelations that followed the unfated war, none were more concerning than the effect that the eclipsed moon had on the elven race. Destroyed almost entirely during the attack on the Font of Power, the glowing white fragment of the World Tree in Everfey never recovered. In the years that followed, many elves started to report a sense of weakness in their limbs, or starting to feel fatigue and illness for the first time. One evening, while in her chambers, Queen Orianna stood looking into a mirror, only to notice a single strand of gray hair upon her head. This was the only sign the elven queen needed. The elves had lost their long lifespans and almost severed their connection with the Feywild. This dark fate for the elves was something Orianna could not abide, and she would spend the rest of her shortened lifespan fighting to find a way to restore her people to their previous greatness, no matter who stepped in her way. The Dwarven Council thrived in the years following the Silver Eye's fall. Rudra and Moira Irongut voting to overturn the traditional caste system for a more progressive one. Instead of dwarves being born into a certain caste, they would instead choose their own path once they reached adulthood. This new form of society even allowed the castless dwarves to return to their families in Arkshield. It was a bright new day for the dwarven people who had lived in such darkness for so long, as they now placed individuality over tradition. As the tabaxi druid child Therald grew and reached adolescence, he rebelled against the teachings of his kin. Seeing the circle of the moon's old-fashioned ways in need of evolution, this created a schism, and eventually Myra the Archdruid banished him and like-minded druids from New Mindera. Therald forged the Circle of the Void, a new sect of druids who worship the Traveler, transforming into aberrations instead of beasts. The dragonborn clans of Nahron had been torn asunder after the death of Maul. This one singular warchief, the first in thousands of years, had brought hope to many. But his ultimate defeat by Phileas Senec in the Realm of Fire had broken the Dragonborn people. Razen Draken, returning to the Isles of Nahron, was able to reunite his people, even allowing those black Dragonborn exiled by their people to be brought back into the fray. Though the blue Dragonborn race was brought to near extinction by Maul during his rule, some are said to have escaped to a distant land. It is said that Razen had bedded more Dragonborn than any in recorded history, and that his bloodline would continue through the ages. The Dragon Guard, defeated in Thordorol, were never reformed after the unfated war. Instead, the land of the gods have remained empty, a grim reminder to the realm of what hubris wrought. In the luscious orange and yellow hues of Altenshire, the sounds of music and merriment are heard. From the halfling town of Suddenbury's village, there stands Newt, a small goblin child who had become a student to Cedric Crow. Newt listens to the music and closes his eyes as he remembers the halfling who had given him a chance and did it with a smile.
And that, my friends, with that, we're going to end this campaign. So, congratulations, guys. You successfully finished a campaign from 1 to 20, which is something only maybe 5% of D&D players ever get to do in their lives. So, that's pretty
cool.
Yeah.
It went so fast.
Yeah, it only took like 4 years. All right. I want to thank everybody for listening to us and all the love and support you've given us since we started. This is not the end, even though this episode is called The End, for we are going to continue into campaign 2, and we're actually going to be start recording that very soon, and we're going to start with brand new characters and in the lost continent of the Isles of Umbra. With a brand new story, brand new characters, brand new feel, you'll see. And, yeah. So I'm going to work on this epilogue, and I'll probably release as like an extra episode. But yeah. That's it. Anybody want to say anything?
No.
No. Didn't think so. You're all probably tired. Okay. Goodbye, everybody. And thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Goodbye.